Session. So we're going to do testing. Hopefully this works. Okay. I'm using a new recording program. Hopefully it'll work after last week's failure. Okay. We're going to do Megillat Esther. We're not going to start from the beginning because every year I start from the beginning and then we never get any farther. We're going to start from Perek Shlishi. Okay. So I don't know about you. I think there's a general feeling that this year is different than other years. Don't you? You know what I'm saying? That normally you have this feeling that it's that, you know, okay, history goes on, and things have changed a little bit, but somehow, I think with the rise of ISIS, on the one hand, which has been meteoric and sort of shocking, at one side, and at the same time, we're in America, I don't know how much people outside of America really follow closely what goes on in America, but the presidential elections in America are just very, very different than they've ever been. Okay. Now I will say
everything is changing. Europe is changing.
Also,
in the past year, like everything's been going on.
Right, with all the Muslims going into Europe,
and
it's interesting how they were so open-minded at first, and now they're like, that's over. You know what I'm saying? What? Now they're not happy. He says, let me see if this thing is still recording. Because it's not supposed to. Oh, it is. All right, let's hope this still records when it turns itself off. We'll see what happens, okay?
Yeah.
Is there a way of making sure that it stays on?
It's on. You can see it in the time.
Whatever. Okay. The story of Megillat Esther, for people who study Megillat Esther, is the story of Jewish history in the Gola. I mean, because it's a story of the rise of Jews in a foreign country. Right, the rise to power of whoever, it really doesn't matter who. The connection between that person and the Jewish people, as we see it, because Jews always see everything in terms of Jewish history, in terms of our relationship, you know what I'm saying? Right, the fate of the Jews vis-a-vis that country and what happens afterwards.
Do we or should we?
Chazal think that we should.
Right, we should.
Right.
But do we? But
who's we? We do. They don't. Whoever they is. You know what I'm saying?
We live here.
It's we versus they. I don't know. Like, you want to get into that? Okay, so how do we see that in terms of, is there a way of trying to understand what's going on today in terms of the Megillah that we're reading? Now, it's interesting to me. People, there's all this hysteria in the, I would say, I don't know if it's liberal Jewish press or the religious Jewish press, that Donald Trump is like the rise of Haman or Mussolini. And I think that's ridiculous. I think that's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, here he's convincing a whole people. He's like, there was an article in the Washington Post that Trump is like Hitler. And I'm like, whoa, that's like crazy.
That's so ironic considering he's got a Sherman Shabbos grandchild.
That really doesn't matter. I don't think that matters at all. Sherman Shabbos grandchild?
Yeah, his daughter converted. Orthodox
that
conversion,
I know.
And
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Trump is like Haman at all.
Oh.
I think Haman is like a Achashverosh. Like, what does he keep saying? They ask him, what are you going to do? And what does he say?
A bunch of nothing.
No, he says a bunch of nothing. He said, but what are you going to do when you get in and like Iran comes up? And he says all the time, he says, I'm going to hire the best guys and they're going to tell me what they think and then I'm going to make a decision. He says it over and over and over again. He said, well, who are you going to pick for Supreme Court? I don't know right now, but when the time comes for me to choose, I'm going to hire some guys, I'm going to bring in the best people, and they're going to give me their advice, and then I'm going to make a decision. And to me, it's like, it sounds exactly like Achashverosh. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have any positions. Well, we don't really know very much about Achashverosh at all. You know, he's like sort of part of it away. Like, how did he rise to power? Who is he exactly? Nobody really knows. There's a lot of Midrashim. We're going to do like, a bunch of Midrashim. But the danger of Achashverosh, the danger of Trump isn't, I'm afraid of what he'll do. It's, I don't know what he'll do. You know what I'm saying? The reason people are so freaked out, like every other politician, they're beholden to the establishment. And that's fine, because the establishment has entrenched power. The danger is, what happens when someone rises who is not beholden to the establishment and doesn't care what anybody thinks and could do anything? Right? That's a scary time.
But look at Obama.
Obama was fine.
What do you mean he was fine?
Obama channeled the most money towards Israel, whether you're in favor of this or not, the most money towards Israel than any president in American history.
What about the Iran deal? That was fine?
It's a machloket about whether that's good or not good, right? And Obama is not a big fan of Benjamin Netanyahu. That's pretty much documented.
You think?
But that doesn't mean he's anti-Israel. I mean, there are people in Israel telling him that, I mean, he's a leftist. But there's a limit to how far leftists can go. Because the entrenched left is also in favor of Israel. You understand what I'm saying? As long as you're part of the establishment, you're extremely limited in what you can do and how far you can go in the global political scene. The danger is when somebody rises who's not beholden to anyone. No one can tell him what to do. No one controls him. There's nobody's giving him money.
I think Obama did whatever he wanted.
It's totally not true. It's absolutely not true. Obama just signed. He signed a trade bill with legislation that was anti-BDS or whatever. You notice that?
Yes.
Why did he sign it?
But he wasn't keeping to everything.
See, what you're saying is it's a dangerous thing that we do, because if the president does everything that we like and is not 100%, then he's anti-Israel. Like, you have to look at things in the correct perspective. You don't know what anti-Israel is. You know what I'm saying? The president sent billions of American presidents and billions of dollars to Israel. Billions. Millions and millions of dollars for anti-missile funding. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so you don't like everything, every single thing. He's not anti-Israel. He's not. You have to be fair.
He's anti-Netanyahu.
Yes. He can't stand Bibi. He can't stand the right-wing government. He's like, what do we say, Razi Barkai. He wants us to be more left. I disagree with him. I think he's wrong. But there's a huge gulf between that and he's anti-Israel. A huge gulf. Okay? And you have to be fair about that. I really think it's important to be fair about that. A lot of people do. I didn't say you did. A lot of people do. Whereas Ahasuerus gets up, he could be your biggest friend one day. He could tell you to build the Beit HaMikdash one day. And the next day, some guy convinces him, you know, we don't really need Jews in this country. And he says,
okay.
Yeah. What about your daughter? She'll stay in my house. Sound familiar? Sound interesting? Okay. I think it's very compelling. The danger, it's a danger of a wild card where you have no idea what's going to happen.
But
this
is
our
test in this generation that in the times before Mashiach is going to help be a whole test of Emuna, which is what Purim is.
See, everybody quotes to me, in the times of Mashiach, I was speaking to a guy about that, like the Gemara says, there'll be tremendous chutzpah, right? Name me a generation, like you said. Who said this? Name me a generation that didn't think that their children were like ridiculous.
No, but
chutzpah.
I think chutzpah is different.
Chutzpah yes, gay. You know what I'm saying?
No, like the chutzpah of the Temple Mount. Like that's chutzpah, what's going on at the Temple Mount.
Abdavka, why Temple Mount?
When they turn around and say that it was never Jewish, that is no... That's what I'm talking about when I say...
The enemies of Israel are always enemies of Israel. Would you be expecting to say, yes, please take it? You know what I'm saying? No, that bothers me less. The only sign that the Gemara says that I think is incredibly clear, the Gemara in Ketubot says, when you see the land of Israel begin to sprout forth and blossom, and there's no greater sign of Geula than that. Right? And that's something that never happened before, that happens in our time. Right? That's a... You know what I'm saying? I'm going to go running right after this year, and there's wheat up to here, and it's beautiful. It's like, it's so nice. Okay, Achar is Reper Gimel we're doing. Achar Gavrei Ma'ileh. After these things, the rise of Bigtan and Teresh, and the attempt to assassinate the king. Okay, that was identified by Mordechai. We're going to leave that on the side. After those things, Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh at Haman ben Hamdata Agagi vayinaseihu vayasem et kiso me'al kol asarim asher ito. After these things, the king raised up Haman, the son of Hamdata, the Agagite, vayinaseihu. Naso, what is Naso?
Lift up.
He gidal oto, he made him big, and he also lifted him up. Vayazem et kiso me'al kol asarim asher ito. Why did he do that? We don't really know anything about Haman, right? But why would a king rise up, lift up somebody else, an individual? Okay, there's a bunch of reasons that you could suggest. Why would a king specifically give power to someone and make him significant and important? Perek Yemo, you see where I am? Chapter 3? Perek Yemo, Pasuk Aleph. Okay? It's an interesting, meaning we're kind of flying blind, really not knowing exactly. But if you would think about politically, why would a political leader give tremendous power and raise up somebody else?
When they work with him and not against him.
Okay, right. One, you see them as a threat.
Or you get more money and more power.
Right. There's got to be some interest. There's no reason why Ahasuerus would give power to a power-hungry whoever. You know what I'm saying? You know what they say about your enemies?
Keep them close.
Right. So Ahasuerus, on the one hand, I don't think he's, like, he is in Jewish lore, he is like sort of described as kind of a buffoon.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think that's fair. I don't know if it's real. Like, he's definitely malleable, but he survived. You don't get to be like, okay, well, I'll do the Trump analogy because you're thinking it, right?
No, I was thinking
you don't get to be a certain place by being an idiot.
No, but you do get to be a certain place because of birth.
Ahasuerus was not born into wealth.
Which is why he has to keep his enemies.
100%, but I'm saying he got to be the king by being, he might not be a good leader, but he got to where he is by incredible political savvy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you get to be where you are. Knowing how to manipulate, knowing how to put yourself in, knowing how to, you know, use people. So Gidal Amech Ahasuerus Haman. So what happened just now? It was an assassination on his life. Okay, people tried. When do people try to assassinate the king?
When they see them weak.
Right. When they perceive him as weak.
Yeah.
Okay? He's weak. So I heard, I don't want to get into all of this, but there's a whole mahalach. I think it's Rabbi Meidan or Rabbi, I don't remember. But the whole first chapter, right, is interesting, okay? That he has 127 countries. Why is he weak? He's the king of the entire known world. Okay? So there's a whole theory that he brought them all in for some big military campaign that lost. Right, you know, he's at the height of his power. He leaves 127 countries, but it's a very tenuous control. Like, how much do you really control? How much can you really control the whole world? From in the ancient times, from the middle of nowhere.
It doesn't last that long.
No,
The Roman Empire.
How long?
That long.
Right. The more you try to spread out. Look, England, Hitler. The more you spread out your power, the more shitchi, the more surface it is. You know,
Thing with bringing your enemies close, it makes me think of like present history where some people put their biggest competitors in positions where they're going to fail, where the responsibility is so big.
And in Israel, they do that all the time.
That's what
you can be Sar HaOtzar.
Exactly! That's what I was thinking of.
Is it really? Yeah.
Now, like when you said that, why would he do it?
Right, Kahlon, like they're thinking about, is there going to be new elections? So this guy Kahlon from, what's it called, Kulanu, right?
Lapid last time.
So they said the reason there's not going to be elections this year is because housing prices went up. And so Kahlon knows there's no way he can run against Netanyahu because... Yeah, housing prices went up. All right, so that's possible. What else does Haman have that Ahasuerus needs? What does the king need? And think ancient times. Don't think modern times. What does Ahasuerus need? No, he doesn't need sons. He doesn't need that. He probably had a zillion sons. He has a zillion wives. I'm sure there's illegitimate children from here up the wazoo. Okay?
His brain.
No, he doesn't need his brain. What does he need? What does the king need? What do kings need all the time in ancient
heirs,
whatever?
Heirs.
What?
Advisors?
No, they don't need advisors. Well, he said he needed advisors, but...
Okay, tell us.
Money.
Money. Oh, right. Only in ancient times, huh?
Now they just print their own money. Really? Now, that meaning money makes the world go round. Why did Iran pseudo-capitulate and make the deal? For money. That's all. It's all about money. Okay? The power is in economies. It always has been. It always was. So it could very well be, and I'm going to suggest this to you, it could very well be that why did he raise up Haman by Yenas Ehu? Because he didn't have money, and Haman clearly had money.
Right, it's just after a war that he lost, he probably lost a lot of money.
What's that?
If he just lost a war.
Correct.
He lost money and lost.
And you're trying to finance your kingdom, and you're trying to finance whatever, and you're perceived as weak because you're poor, and no one's going to support you. Right, there's a whole like European history like that, you know what I'm saying? That the Pope was and the kings, the Pope had the money, and the kings had the power, like et cetera, et cetera, and the important families, and the banking system, and of course, who's involved in that?
Jews.
The Jews, right?
Rothschild.
You know what I'm saying? We don't. All of this is tied in. Remember, the Megillah isn't going to say explicitly what's going on. It's not going to tell you the geopolitical history, but there's got to be a reason to think that some of this is about the money. You know what I'm saying? That there's a lot of money involved here.
How do we know Haman has money?
What?
How do we know Haman has money?
How does Haman convince, we're going to see it later in this parak, how does Haman convince Ahasuerus? What does he say to convince Ahasuerus to let him destroy the Jews? You want to read it? Let's read it. One second. Let's just skip. Hold on a second. We'll skip for a second. Skip to the end of the perek. Why not? Because you asked me a question. How do I know it's about money? No. What is he? Skip to pasuk. Chet. We're going to go back, okay? Haman lemelech Ahasuerus. Haman said, pasuk chet. Yeshno am echad mefozar u mefarad bein ha'amim. B'chol medinot malchutecha. There's one nation that's mifozar, spread out, miforad,
separated.
Bein ha'amin, among the nations. And all of the medinot, all the states of your kingdom. Ve'datehem shonot mikol am. And their attitudes are different from every nation. Ve'adate ha'melech einam osim. They don't follow the king's laws. Ve'lamelech ein shove lahanicham. And it's not worthwhile for the king lahanicham.
To conquer them.
To leave them. Okay. Im ala melech tov, yikatev la'abdam. Would you mind if I destroy them? Now, if you're a king, and somebody says, I want to destroy a nation among all the other people, what would you say?
What's in it for me?
And?
Are you crazy?
Right. Why? Why are you crazy?
You can't do that.
Why not?
You can't just decide you don't like
genocide.
What?
I don't know.
Genocide, by the way, is not really compelling an argument for people.
Okay.
I mean, we're laughing, but throughout
those
history,
days.
It hasn't been. What do you mean those days?
Today, look at
what do you mean those days?
Today.
Syria is bombing its own people with chemical weapons, and what is the world doing?
Nothing.
Right. So it's not genocide. People aren't concerned about genocide. You have to kill the right people, and then they get mad.
They're only doing nothing
because
they don't want to get involved.
What?
But it was in their backyard. It would be different.
You better kill them.
It's all semantics. It's mamish all semantics. You're like, what do you say? One person's terrorist, another person's freedom fighter?
Yeah.
Right? It's all semantics. Genocide is objectively morally troubling only when it's convenient for you.
But you're losing taxpayers and you're losing,
right?
You know, if you're talking really about money.
Forget that. It's a balagan.
Right, balagan.
Do you really want to start a balagan? Like as history has taught us, when you start a balagan,
you don't know where it's going to lead
you. You don't know where it's going to lead you. Okay? Mm-hmm. Right? As Haman is going to realize. Right? So, but how does he yikatev la'abdam? So, why would the king do it? Va'aseret alafim kikar kesev. Eshkol al yedei osei ha-melacha al-avi yangizei ha-melech. Right?
Yeah.
Right? So, like, he knows exactly what the king needs. He's like, I've got something.
Yeah, you just don't notice that.
Really? Oh, you didn't notice that?
And now it's...
It's obvious.
Now it's so obvious.
Yeah, now I'm remembering that I've read this, but I didn't...
Right, so like, if
twice a year.
Aseret alafim kikar kesef, 10,000 kikar kesef, I'm going to pay a bunch of silver.
A lot
of money, right? There's money transfer. We'll transfer some money.
In order to do this?
Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's...
Not it's not to pay for the war, but it's to just straight out give him money?
Straight out...
It's like a payment for...
What do we call it in today? What do we call it?
It's like a bribe.
Graft, yes, a bribe. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? But sure, he didn't say it that way, but, you know, like... It's for me,
you know,
this.
Make it with your mom.
Yeah, right. Why do I need this for? you know. like, and so the king says, Vayasa Hamelech etabato me al yado, vidna laman benagagitso. How are you doing? No problem. Right, you know what I'm saying? Like, Haman knew, like, we don't hear all the discussion, but Haman knew what the king needed.
Yeah.
Like, meaning, who needs this balagan? Now, what did Haman not tell? It's interesting. I never noticed this until this year. Every time you read it, you learn something new. What did Haman not say that he wanted to do to the Jews? It's interesting. Yikatev le'obdam. What does that mean?
Get rid of them.
What does that mean?
Make them
relocate them.
Yeah. Make them not here.
He doesn't say specifically that he's going to annihilate and kill them.
Correct. He doesn't say...
Abdam, what does that mean?
Missing? Right. Abdam. La'abed means to make lost.
Lost. Yeah.
Okay? Does it mean to kill people?
It could, but not necessarily.
What else could it mean?
Kicking them out of the country.
Exile them. But they're all dispersed.
Them?
They're all dispersed. Oh.
What?
Assimilate them.
They'll be lost.
There's something that...
How
is
he going to...
What?
How is he going to...
It's easy to assimilate Jews. Now... People think what Haman probably thought, or Achashverosh, if he meant assimilate, what Achashverosh probably thought it meant is to enact laws to make the Jews not act like Jews.
Imposition.
Right, or whatever.
Force
them to be like everybody else. Which is obviously never effective, it doesn't work at all, okay?
What's the translation of
this? Abdam.
It says, let it be written that they may be destroyed.
Destroyed.
That's commentary.
Of course. No, it is commentary. Le obdam.
What is
Rashi?
There's no Rashi.
Yikatev sraim lishalach le obdam. Le obdam. I mean, I'm saying le obdam. Haman meant to destroy them, so that's what it means.
Right.
But what did Achashverosh hear? what does it mean to destroy a people, to destroy a nation? Le'obdan. Le'obdan can be interpreted in a lot of different ways.
Right.
I.e., if Ahasuerus is not the monster that we think, and Ahasuerus is, you know what I'm saying? If genocide, like, that's genocide. Would you agree to do that for a certain amount of money, for any amount of money? Like, if that's what you thought was going to happen, I would go, if I was Ahasuerus, I would say, hey guys, Haman offered me 10,000, you know, kikar kesef to kill y'all.
I mean, are you going to give me the
knot? Yeah.
Right.
I'd rather not, but I mean, it's a lot of money. You know what I'm saying?
Could you organize a little bit more?
You think that didn't happen?
You think it did?
Throughout history? Not here. Throughout Jewish history? All the time.
They try to buy their...
All the time. If you're offered a certain amount of money, then you go to the Jews and say, you know, I mean, things cost money today. I got a lot of problems.
Wasn't it stuck with the one rabbi who said, do not pay to get me out of jail because I'll keep going?
No, that was about Rami Rutenberg. Right, but that's the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. Well, we're not talking about Pidyon Shvuyim. We're talking about hegemonies who threaten Jews with death if you don't pay the taxes. This is the tax. Pay it or die. You know, okay, we pay. You know what I'm saying? So if Ahasuerus thought that he was destroying them, like it's possible to accept that Ahasuerus wasn't a rube necessarily, but also wasn't a monster.
Even though
later on he says, it's interesting, what does he say when he says, there's this guy that wants to kill my whole people? And what does Ahasuerus say? What the hell are you talking about? You know what I'm saying? So what the hell are you talking about could be I don't know who David Duke is. I mean, I don't know. What do you mean? I'll have to find out what that is. It could be just a total bluff. Or it could be, what are you talking about? Whoever said that?
He said he was going to convert you all to become good Muslims. And
that's right. You know, we're all Zoroastrians.
But on the other hand, Haman wrote a letter with a specific date. So what did he think that was about?
Hold on.
Like, I'm going to convert everybody...
Yeah, and also you don't ask questions. How are you going to do it? Why? You know, like, you abdicate responsibility.
Of course. What do you mean? That's exactly what leaders do. I avow any knowledge of the details of that operation.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they do. You're going to get it done? Yeah. How are you going to get it done? Sir, you don't want to know that.
You don't want to know, right?
That happens all the time. It's like... I'm saying this story is like the story of history. It happens all the time.
Politics.
They like Ahasuerus is a shrewd politician. They're going to come back at him and say, "Did you order the destruction of the Jewish people?"
What?
You know,
I didn't sign that.
That's exactly what he said. But you're saying that's exactly what he said.
Yeah. But he gave him the ring. What?
You gave him the ring. Of course, I gave him the ring. He was going to do it. It was an assimilation project. Are you killing anybody? What?
It will be written.
What will be written? Le'obdam. Well, okay, I have to tell you the Gra, the Vilna Gaon. It's crazy. And let's go on, and then we'll come back. We'll go on to the Vilna Gaon, and then we'll come back. Because what's so interesting to me is, we read this argument about Haman. Like, Haman says, that the Hemshon, what's Haman's argument? Like, we know Haman hates the Jewish people.
He says their laws are different, they act different, they don't respect you because
so what?
They've separated themselves from us.
So what?
They could be dangerous because they don't, if they're not going by your laws.
What really concerns me is not the past, but the present, the future. I mean, what did people say about Jews always? See, I never grew up experiencing anti-Semitism. I didn't, you know, which is like unique in Jewish history almost, to have a child grow up and never having experienced, you know, sharp anti-Semitism. How was it in South Africa? Right, we're living in a fascinating era.
My husband did all the time.
No.
Your husband did also?
No.
You did. Where, in Belgium?
In Europe, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's so interesting. Very interesting. So how could it possibly... What? You did?
I lived in John Birch County, you know, John Wayne, and in Irvine they used to have a sign up, no Jews, no blacks.
Right.
And until the University of California wanted to open a campus there. And then they said, you take down that sign, you let Jews and blacks live here. We're taking our campus elsewhere.
When was that? Wow.
That was in the early 70s, but when we moved there, there were very few Jews and... Yeah.
Is anybody following the Oscars controversy
about
the blacks?
No.
What?
Yeah.
Why are you making a face?
Well, what Chris Rock said was kind of accurate.
He said it. What did he say? He said, You're not like blatant Ku Klux Klan racists. He said it explicitly. He said, but you're the kind of racists that say, we love you, but you're just not, you're not right for us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he said it to their face. Is anything going to change? So, meaning, is there not racism in America or anti-Semitism in America? Or is just not in vogue to be anti-Semitic, so therefore it kind of hides in plain view? That's the question. The fact that
what's
I don't experience
the BDS?
It. What?
BDS.
The BDS is primarily Arab activists. No?
In South
That's
Africa, it is.
Yeah, it's. I mean, on campuses,
no.
It's primarily Arab activists.
Not
on
anymore
campuses.
In America. It's
Who knows? Anyway,
not
so b'fozar u'mefarad v'datehem shonot mikol am. So I think to myself, like, how could this happen again? And the answer is very, very easy. What is the whole Zionism is racism based on?
We think we're exclusive.
Why do we think we're exclusive? Why are we different?
People.
No, not the Jewish. Not the Jewish, right? The thing is, somebody said, I heard this talk by Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik. It was given here in Israel, actually. A talk about modern orthodoxy. And he said the biggest challenge that we face as a Jewish community on campuses, there are two things. One big challenge we face on secular campuses is the idea of the promotion of personal experimentation and sexual hedonism. Right, that is pervasive attitude on all campuses. Like, try everything, do everything. And it's not even ideological. It's more like, just do it, just try it. And Orthodox kids on campus just get swept up in it because when you live in an atmosphere, you're just swept up by it. And once you act a certain way, your actions have tremendous, tremendous consequences for your belief system. You know, it's just, the Gemara says that, Chazal say that. That's one problem. Problem number two is Western society has decided that you can be anything you want to be, i.e., your past has no implication on your future. Right? Everybody has, you know what I'm saying? There's no mechuyavut to whatever your past is. You write a new future, et cetera, et cetera. That is Western ideology. It's rooted, you want to shut the door? The door's bugging you. I don't even notice it now.
Sorry.
Yeah, just pull it close. It's rooted in, that is the root of, like, American democracy is like that. You could be, you know, born to Kenyan parents and you could rise to become the president of the United States. It's largely true.
It's also the melting pot. Give up
Correct.
Everything that you want.
Correct, but it's been entrenched in Western ideology, okay? Which means, it's sort of like backwards in a sense, but it means that it doesn't matter how you were born, it doesn't matter who you are, right? And anyone who believes that it does matter how you're born, and it does matter who your mother was, is
racist.
A racist.
Yeah.
Who are the only people that believe that?
Jews.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Not only Jews, religious Jews.
Right.
Right. What's the only nation in the world that promotes this idea, that it does matter how you were born, officially?
Us,
Israel. It's not such a stretch for someone to get up and say.
The Arabs is no father.
On the basis of immigration is that what you're saying? It's based on
immigration.
Who your parents were.
It's based on genetics.
Right.
Based on birth.
Right. Not anyone can get Israeli citizenship.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. It's not such a
stretch. Well, by the way, what country you are, but you have to.
If someone got up today and said, it's not palatable right now, because those are the winds of political correctness. But it's not so difficult for someone to get up and say, "Yeshno am echad, mefozar u'mefarad bein ha'amim, mechol medinot ha'olam, v'datehem shonot," and they're affecting us. They're dragging us down with their racist ideology and their policies, and who knows how they're affecting us? And we have to separate ourselves from them because they're causing harm to the society.
1933. What?
Racist. We're racists. But I'm saying it's 1933. Like Hitler, it's interesting. It wasn't necessary then. Like everybody understood. He could get up and say, we hate the Jewish people. And nobody had to give a reason. You understand? Here it's interesting that Haman is giving a reason. He's explaining the thought process behind the argument.
Hitler gave a lot of reasons.
What was his reasons? I don't know. What were his reasons?
Economic, and he also had a genetic argument and
because then everybody believed the genetics, right? His argument was, right, the eugenics and the whole,
right,
correct?
Right.
So, but now it's the opposite.
Right, no one believes it.
But it's not so hard to say the exact opposite argument and use it in the exact same way.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? What do you need? All you need is the climate. for people to want to accept it. And what do we need for that? Anyone? What do we need for that?
What, the climate?
Yeah, how do you get that climate?
No.
The climate is not ready for that. Life is too stable right now.
Crisis.
Right. You get a crisis.
Then you get to blame somebody.
Correct. Meaning, Achashverosh, what is that what we see? Achar hadvarim ha'ilu. Achashverosh is in crisis. Someone tried to kill him. Mm. Why did someone try to kill him? Ostensibly, he's weak. He lifts up a person in power who he needs, who's got money, in order to back him up. And this person in power has other agendas. Okay? Haman is a raving anti-Semite. He hates Jews. For whatever reason. Okay? The Midrash gives a tons of reasons. But it doesn't matter what his reasons are. It matters what his arguments are. Right? Are the arguments palatable? So the arguments are palatable. And the way that he says them in such a way, yikatev la'obdam. He says it in such a way that doesn't necessarily explicitly say what he wants to do. Okay? So let's read on and see what happens. Okay? So he gives him the ring on Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer melech l'Haman. So the king says to Haman, Hakesef natun lach, v'ha'am la'asot bo k'tob be'einecha. Right? I personally, when I read this, you take the money. What I read into that is BS. There's no way he didn't take the money.
Right.
No, keep your money. Do what you want. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't come over tape. I don't believe the words Hakesef natun lach. Keep the money. No, you're like, okay. Anyway. Like, it's understood, everybody understands in negotiations that you say one thing and you do another. Plus, also remember that when they're writing the Megillah afterwards, they can't make Achashverosh look evil. Because it was written in his time.
Right.
So it's about Achashverosh has to read it and think that he saved them. Me who's there, ve'ezehu. Uh-huh. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of revisionist history here.
What's the interesting second part of the sentence?
Ha'am, la'asot boka, do what you want with the nation. Okay?
Is there any other historical like evidence of the
of this whole story?
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying,
there's a whole argument about who Achashverosh is, which king it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to remind you, by the way, what we're going to see in a second, there's very little, I mean, you wouldn't know about it because the whole point of this story is it happened before anybody realized what happened. Mm-hmm. There was some, would you know about, like even today, let's say that, you know, Bashar al-Assad decided to kill, you know, 500 of his enemies in some village somewhere.
It doesn't come out in real time. It might come out like years and years
later. Who wrote
the Megillah? Even though at the end of the day, I mean, they did kill 250,000.
250,000 people?
Read.
75,000, no? How much was it?
I went to another shiur that I'd never noticed. Yeah? Some comments. Read how many people the Jews...
We'll get there.
...in the end. And it's 250,000.
Nobody would ever know. In history? Wow. Why would anybody know?
It's like
what's 250,000 people? In ancient times?
Syria, how many people are being killed?
In Syria, more than that.
Yeah,
more than that. Okay. Vayikaru sofrei amelach b'yomer bishon b'sholoshasar yom bo. Vayikat, I'm passing you back. Vayikat kol asher tziva Haman. He wrote everything Haman said. El achashtar b'nei amelach v'alach hapachot asher al-medina al-medina ve'al sei am v'am medina al-medina kichtava v'am v'am kirshono b'shem amelach ha-shverosh nechtav v'nechtav v'tabat amelach. That's a lot of words. So many words.
Yeah, bad. It's interesting because it's not like it was just written in some secret document. Every country had their own.
Hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. What did they write? Vinishlos varim biyad haratzim hakol midyon hamelech. Lahashmid, laharog, ulabed et kol ha-yehudim. Minah va'azakein tafan Hashem biyom echad bishlosha asar yom. L'chodesh nimasar u'chodesh adar u'shalal ha-mavos. Okay? They wrote it down. Now, this is what the Vilna Gaon says. Fascinating. Now, so we know that so it seems explicit, and the commandment went out to everyone. Patshegen haktav lihinatein dat v'chol medina v'medina gedgalui l'chol amim liyot atidim liyom hazeh. Translate. What does that mean? Verse 14.
Yeah, the copies of the document were to be promulgated in every province.
Okay.
And be published to all people that they should be ready for that day.
Okay, says the Vilna Gaon. Okay? The following. He says, Perush means, Ki haya yare lichto b'farhesa shiyargu et ha-yehudim. He did not publish that they would kill the Jews. Ki haya yodea shayehudim ha-yurudfim l'hashwarot v'ayu notim b'am b'tzad zchut. If the Jews around the world found out about this decree, they have power. Mm-hmm. What else do they have?
Money.
Money. You know, it's not so simple to kill all the Jews in one fell swoop. One second. V'ayat zarich lichtov achshav mifurash sheyedu, ki yat zarich lishlach lekol tzvei eretz leman yedu lasod b'yehudim. But so on the one hand, I can't tell everybody what's going to happen, but I can't not tell them what's happening because they have to be ready. L'chein asa kach. This is what he did. I'm reading from the Pirush Hagra. Shekatav la'achash darpanim v'hapachot la'hashmigu la'harod. He did send a letter to the achash darpanim and the pachot, to the local ministers. What?
Yeah, leaders.
Leaders and ministers to kill them. Aval pachegen haktav li'natein dat. But the copy to tell everyone, lo yichtivu. Don't tell them, ele yu atidim liyom ze. That they should be ready. Perush yu mechanim liyom ze. I.e. tells, what?
I.e.
tells all the ministers, tells all the leaders in every country. I never thought about this. I never understood it this way. Never. But he says, all leaders in all the country, we're going to kill the Jews on the 13th of Adar. Don't tell anyone. What you should tell everybody is plant, like send out, say, on the 13th of Adar, there's a big action. Everybody be ready.
Because it says,
And the Jews are ready too.
The Jews are ready too. Uh-huh. They're ready. Everybody,
they
everybody.
Don't know for what.
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right. So everybody comes down on that one day, excited. What's the day? The big day is here, and everybody's in the town square, and everybody's like, you know, ready. And then the guy says, and
kill
all the Jews.
All the Jews step to the right.
That's right.
Okay. What like is he getting to kill the Jews? What would they get out of it?
What do they get out of it? Anyone who kills a Jew today can take all of his money.
Wow. It makes sense. And nice paintings.
It says here, the translation is that the writing was given out as a law in every province and published to all the people that they might be ready.
So the Rabbi God says the law was exactly the published that what?
To all the people.
To all the people that? Read it again.
Can I read it again. It says, and the letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and annihilate all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, namely on the 13th. Mm-hmm.
Good. That was sent to the ministers. Next pasuk, 14.
To take the spoil, the copy of this writing will be given out as law in every province, was published to all the people that they may be ready for this.
Pachemen haktav. The copy, lehi naten. Let's read it in Hebrew now. This is how the Vilna Gaon is reading it. Pachegen haktav. Okay, the copy was, lehi naten dat b'chol medina v'dina nagoy l'amim. To give a commandment. The copy was, lehiyot atidim liyom hazeh. Be ready. Don't tell them what for. This is what the Vilna Gaon says. I mean, you can, by the way, snapshot. It's snapshot, what?
But they didn't know. They did find out.
Who found out? Who found out?
Mordechai
found out. Why?
Because he spoke multiple languages.
And Mordechai is a sire in the government.
Right. Mm-hmm. He was a leader.
So he told the Jews.
So he got the letter.
And he was a leader. In Shushan, they knew. But nobody else knew.
But it's hard to believe that there weren't any other Jews Shushan in government other than Mordechai.
Well, he says, Ve'ir Shushan Nevocha, there were Nevocha, Shira'u Shekatobo Shiyu Muchanim L'Shosha Asar, Ve'en Yodim Mazeh Mahuzeh. They're all freaking out. Why are they freaking out? What's going to happen? You can imagine the advertising campaign. It's coming.
when the year turned to 2000.
What?
Nobody knew what was
going to
happen.
It's so interesting. Now when you're like, when I see on YouTube, like anything from CNN, there's always a countdown. 35 hours to the next debate. 14 days until the whatever. Like, you know what I'm saying? Shushan. Less than a year till the 13th of Adar. What's on the 13th of Adar? We don't know.
But Haman knew Mordechai was a leader. So
Mordechai was,
He thought he wouldn't have
time leader.
He's not Haman. Come on. Yeah. He's a nothing.
But even if he knew, it didn't matter.
Sat down to drink before they say that.
Yeah.
Mordechai and Haman sat down to drink.
No, but Achashverosh and Haman.
Yeah, I mean,
they're sitting on a drink. And the city's going crazy.
So they're okay.
So this is the game. Achashverosh, I don't know if he knows. He claims, he will later claim, he had no knowledge of these events. Okay, right?
Yeah.
He will explicitly claim that.
Yeah, but that might be also the rewriting and the revisionism that you spoke about.
No, but also
I have to tell you, it's interesting. His reaction and his anger at Haman are genuine.
Because he thinks that Haman's trying to steal his wife.
Yeah.
One possibility. Okay.
Maybe. I mean, yeah.
Right.
One possibility. Well, personal.
Or he's taking over.
Yeah, he's trying to steal his wife and everything else.
You're right. Work. Correct. There's nobody know. All of these things are correct. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's what's fascinating. So Haman clearly knows. The Vilna Gaon says, like, it's so fascinating. You could never get away with genocide right away. You could just send a letter saying, like, we're going to kill all the Jews on the 3rd. It wouldn't work.
Correct.
So the way you do it is you build power and you build suspense and you develop a network of like-minded people. And then when your infrastructure is sufficiently prepared, then you let loose in one fell swoop.
Thanks for the recipe.
Yeah, there you go. It's not my recipe. It's not my recipe.
It's been tried and tested many times in history.
Many times. So it's not, you know what I'm saying? Just, no one should be surprised. All right, let's go. I want to go back to this. So that was the Vilna Gaon is like,
wow.
Whoa! I never thought about that.
It's really a chiddush.
Yeah, it's a tremendous chiddush, but it's very, very, very scary. Okay, so I want to share with you. I saw a bunch of midrashim. Hold on a second. Gidal Melech Hashveyosh Taman. So that was in Pasuk Aleph. I want to go back to the beginning of the parak because I want to do parak Shlishi today. Gidal Melech Hashveyosh Taman Ben Hamdata. So the midrash says, okay. Rab Pinchas Amar. I want to say, I wasn't just making up the money thing. Shnei Ashirim Amdu Ba'olam. There were two rich people in the world. Echad Yisrael Be'echad Ovdei Kochavim. One the Jews had and one the non-Jews had. V'lo Amad Lehem Memonam Ela L'Ratam. And their money never was not good for them. It was bad. Korach B'Yisrael. Right, Korach was rich. Shematza Otsrot Shel Kesev V'Zahav Sheitmin Yosef. He found Yosef's hidden Egyptian gold. Okay? So it's interesting, like, it puts Korach in a different light. Korach was a very important, influential Jew. He was the wealthiest Jew. V'haman v'obdei kochavim lakach otzrot malchei Yehuda. There are all these midrashim, crazy midrashim, about Haman, like, the Jews had gotten initial permission to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Haman travels somehow all the way to land of Cana, land of Judea, and stops them from rebuilding. Okay, the midrashim about Haman preventing them from rebuilding. That's also another theme that's like underlying here, the whole issue of the rebuilding, the reconstitution of the Jewish people. You know what I'm saying? It would make unbelievable sense if we believe that we are on the process of Geula and the land of Israel is the flowering of the redemption. It doesn't make sense for Amalek not to try one last stand before the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Scary enough to think about. But if you are Amalek, the power of Amalek, the koach of Amalek in the world that we understand exists, it's not just going to let it happen. It's just not. I wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? It's the antithesis of everything that you stand for, that you exist for. Okay? So if Haman represents the final effort to prevent the building of the Beit HaMikdash, right? It exists in the world. It's going to come out. So the question is, how is it going to come out? And as we all know, after this story, right, Esther has the kid, and then Koresh, and Koresh gives the permission for them to go and rebuild Bayit Sheni. Now, okay, we want to build the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Our friends do not want us to build the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Okay? This is well known. Okay? When the push comes to shove, we don't know how that's going to happen, but eventually it will, and we want to build the Beit HaMikdash. What are they going to do to stop us from building the Beit HaMikdash?
Everything they can.
That's right. Okay. Kevan shira'a hamelech et oshro be'eshrat banav lefanav sarim. When Ahasuerus saw his wealth, Haman's wealth, Amar begedlo v'romamo. Right? So I actually didn't make it up. And Midrash says explicitly, why did he put him into power? Why does anybody put anybody into power? He's got money. He's an influential person. These are banking families. You know, it's like the whole Bernie Sanders thing. Right? What's Bernie Sanders' whole kvetch? Right? His whole thing is? Wall Street is ruining this country. You don't know what the problem with Bernie Sanders is saying?
You know, money controls.
What's the problem with what he's saying? The problem is he's totally right. Yeah. Right? Wall Street almost destroyed America. And if you ever see, there's a movie called The Big Short, right? How corrupt it was.
Yeah,
well. Right? You saw it?
Yeah.
Pat, scary. Okay? Very scary. Wall Street is ruining America. Does anybody really think that in 10 years or 15 years or 2 years, they're not going to do it again?
They were doing it again.
Did anybody do anything to prevent them from doing it again? The answer is, this whole movie, you should see it, this movie called The Big Short, this whole movie about how these guys are so entrenched in the government, really, mamish entrenched in the government, none of them went to jail for what they did.
Yes.
Notice that?
Yeah,
the laws that they passed are just nothing to prevent them from doing what they did again. Right? They will do it again. Right?
It's true here too.
And then who are we going to blame? Who are we going to blame?
Jesus.
That's right. I mean, I know, if you're listening at home, I know these sound like conspiracy theories. All I'm doing is just repeating to you what happened before. Like, how could it happen again? Right? Is it at all possible that Wall Street's not going to be so greedy as to do something so crazy as to destroy the American economy?
No.
You just saw them do it. They just did it. America, like, by the skin of its teeth, by borrowing on itself as much as it possibly could, pulled the world out of global recession. So when they do it again, and somebody said, China says, yeah, you don't have the money. Right? We can't imagine what's going to happen. And then there's a guy, somebody happens to be president, who's a little buffoonery, who's a little dumb, who doesn't really know what to do, and his guys are going to tell him what to do. He's going to win.
Is he going
to
win?
They say
that both Hillary and Sanders can beat him.
And they said, what did they say about the guys before? What did they say before he started?
Yeah,
what they say?
I mean, he won't make it through.
There's no way. Every 100% of political analysts said, there's no way he'll get. It's like a joke. There's no way.
So
I'm saying it now. What's today's date? That the third of the 3rd of March, whatever.
Second March.
What? That he's gonna win.
He's gonna win. Everybody likes a winner.
Do you really think so? Wow,
He's better at them. Have you ever seen Hillary in a debate? She's so fake. She's so the thing. Everybody can't. People can't stand her.
I've never heard him on Israel.
You won't.
He doesn't know anything.
That's right. People can't. You know what he said about Israel?
I don't know anything about foreign policy.
He said it's a deal. It's a deal. It's a tough deal. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make that deal. That's what he said. That's what he said. I don't think he's pro-Israel, anti-Israel. I really don't think so. Everything is in negotiation. Let's see.
There's a certain honesty,
I don't know if I can make that deal. Who knows? It's a deal. It's a hard deal. It would be the deal of the century. That's exactly what he said. That's exactly what he said.
He's not wrong.
Right. See? And you get him in front of Hillary, and she comes off as so fake.
Yeah.
Why? She's a politician. They hate people today hate politicians.
True.
You put him up against any politician, he could say anything he wants as long as people think, Donald.
He's genuine.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's I don't know. He's going to win.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I woke up thinking this morning.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that.
It seems too strange to be true.
But it's a great... Did you watch that? I was watching like how they put a thing together that they're doing a joke.
That it's all like a big...
They make much more money if they get a candidate that'll definitely...
Yes. It was a play on that famous play on Springtime for Hitler, on what's the producers.
Right.
That's the theme of the producers. That's the theme. The theme is, hey, let's get this guy Hitler... Because they're backers and they need the whole point of the play. From what I never saw it is
that they want to make money.
They want to make money off him. So they're like, hey, we'll back Trump. They make Trump into Hitler, basically. That's the whole point of the play. And they don't understand. The more they do this, the more they establish it, the more the media makes him into a villain, the more votes they're asking people, the more votes they're giving him.
Because
he all he has to say is they hate me.
Yeah, he's anti-establishment.
They never support me.
They don't want change.
They don't understand. They want to keep it the way it is. I'm telling you, he's going to win. Anyway, okay. Next pasuk. Gidal amelcha shveirosh. Okay. V'yaseh v'kiso al asarim. I'm reading another midrash. Esther Rabbah. What?
We sat forward.
What? Oh, you sat forward as if we're reading. Sorry. I apologize. Okay. There's a whole theme in the Midrash about the idea that, you should look if you have Rashi. Anybody have Rashi? Or none of you have Rashi, okay? Achar dvarim ha'ele gidal amechad v'eshet haman, Rashi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bore b'fu'a l'makatam she'Yisrael, kodim she'yavi ha'maka aleihem. Right? God, He creates the medicine for the affliction that ails the Jews before the affliction comes. I.e.
On which pasuk?
I.e. Chazal see all of this. That we see the hand of God in everything. Right? If Haman had been left to fester and bode his time, he could have actually destroyed the Jewish people. So God brought out Haman. He pulled it out. You know what I'm saying? In order to allow the Jewish people, because in the end, what happens? After this whole story, Achashverosh brings up Mordechai. Mordechai rises, Esther rises, and they bring about the redemption of the Jewish people. So the whole story isn't just one of the destruction of the enemies of the Jewish people. It's about the convoluted way that the Jewish people finally are able to bring about redemption. Okay? So, like, the rise of Haman, in a crazy sense, is the beginning of the redemption.
That's a crazy question. Wait, a religious man.
What?
Very.
Yeah.
Who?
Mordechai.
Very religious. Well, not necessarily.
What? What do you mean?
Prove it.
Didn't he learn?
It's all Midrash. It's all Midrash that he was, like, in the Sanhedrin.
Really? Yeah.
According to the Midrash, of course. He was one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim. According to the Pshat,
and also that he wouldn't bow down. That's
according to the Pshat, I'll ask you this. I think we've discussed this before. What's his name?
Mordechai, which is a Persian name.
Yeah. That's right. Not just a Persian name. Not a Persian name. Anybody know what the name Mordechai is from? The Gemara says Mordechai is from the word Evel Merodach. Evel Merodach is a Persian idol.
Oh.
Okay, it's literally, if the name of this guy was today, Jesus. Jesus the Jew.
And there's a couple of Yehud issues there with Esther as well.
Right. Well, okay, that's his... I don't want to get into that.
His daughter.
But his name was Jesus.
His niece, but he took her Labat.
The Midrash says that his real name... Anybody know his real name?
Petachia.
That's right. His name was Petachia. We named Petachia because he was born on the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. Okay, why is that important? Because that's when the Torah Purim story happened. The salvation of the Jews was on the third day of Pesach. So we don't have to name, but I didn't want to name Mordechai because my brother's name is Mordechai. So the Midrash says, Mordechai Zeh Petachia. What? Well, Mordechai's name was Petachia.
Huh.
So we named him Petachia because of that. But his name wasn't Petachia. What's your English name? What? You want to say? That's right, but you go by Daniela. In Chutz La'aretz, all the Jews...
That bad? I know the answer. That's when we're nice together.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew her something totally different.
That's right. It's like when I see people from South Africa, they're like, oh, do you know so-and-so? And I'm like, who? Oh, Shmuel. You know what I'm saying? Right? Right, everybody changed their name. So my name in America is Abraham Reuben. It wasn't Abraham Reuben. You know what I'm saying? The Jews now recently, the idea of Jewish names become more popular. All my father's name was Seymour, and my grandfather's name was Isidore. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had English names. English speaks to, what does your name speak to? That's exactly what it speaks to. Do you give yourself your Jewish name, or you give yourself your...
So Mordechai is like
when, it's interesting.
Persian name.
We actually went through a metamorphosis. When Simcha was born, and we named him Simcha Allen. Because we wanted him to have an English name.
Uh-huh.
Right? We want him to like, if he ever like went to business or whatever, okay? Bezalel Yosef was Bezalel Joseph. At least he would have Joseph. By the time Petachia was born, we're like, the heck with it. Chaim Petachia. And let the poor nurse at the doctor's office, break your teeth. Chaim, Petet, whatever, come, Folter boy. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just gave up. I didn't care. Like, I said, if the president could be Barack Hussein Obama, my kid's name could be Chaim Petachia Folter. You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Yeah, you know.
The reason I was asking is also because earlier where it says the Jews separated themselves, that if he was like the stark guy, can't imagine him being...
How do you get to be...
They were so separate.
That's right. How did he get to be the Chief Justice, Jesus, whatever? How should we say, conflicting evidence about who Mordechai was. Nonetheless, says the Midrash that you don't have. Okay, this all...
Ki harasha'im
yovdu ve'ayvei Hashem ki yikar karim. Why does God fatten up? Why are people fattened up for the slaughter? A guy had a chamor, a donkey, okay, and a small donkey and a pig. And so, of course, he's giving the pig as much as he wants to eat. L'chamurah l'saricha b'midah. But the donkey and the small donkey, he gives them, you know, a little bit, gives them measured amounts. Amra saicha l'chamurah. Okay? So the small donkey, the little donkey, the baby donkey says to the abba donkey, Ma shote ze ose? This farmer's an idiot. Anu shosim melachto shel bal habayit notin lanu b'midah. We're working all day, and he gives us, you know, a little bit of barley. Chazira, the pig, all he does is lounge around in the mud all day, right? Shalom b'midah, gives him as much as he wants to eat. Amra la tavo hasha'a. The day will come, v'atro'a b'mapalata. You're going to see what happens. Okay? She'en ma'achilin ota yoter lichvoda. They're not fattening him up for her honor. Ela l'ra'ata. For her destruction. Kivan Shabak Landas, when the holiday came. Miyad Nadlula Chazira Vinachruha. Okay? Right? So they took the pig, right? And dinner. Okay? Right? So then they gave food to the animals. Haitam and Ashevet Bambalo Achla. So the baby donkey's like, I'm not eating anything, are you crazy? You give me food, I'm gonna, like, what are you, nuts? Amra la ima. So the mother said, Biti, laha ma'achal gorem, el habatala goremet. It's not the food, it's the lying around in the mud. So he says, the Midrash says, Gidal hamelech achashverosh et Haman. Haman's wealth, it caused an attraction. The king brought him close. Why did the king bring him close? What does the king want?
He wants
his money. Could be Achashverosh is the one laughing after everything. Because what's Achashverosh get in the end?
The money, power,
everything.
He got everything.
Everything.
The girl.
He got everything.
Right?
Everything.
He got the girl. He gave Mordechai Beit Haman. Don't trust me. He gave Mordechai Beit Haman. You know what I'm saying? This buffoonish king, he ended up pretty good in the end.
And he got rid of his biggest competitor.
And
all his sons.
Right? And Haman's like, ha ha ha, walking around, okay, good.
Yeah.
Right, before the fall. You know what I'm saying? There's so much politics here.
Yeah,
it's so fascinating. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot to see, a lot to talk about. So, like, and it's all about, and the Midrash talks about it. There's a bunch of, like, so many fascinating Midrashim. You know what I'm saying? One second. Yeah, anyway, so those are some geopolitical perspectives to see in what's going on today, and history always repeats itself, you know, how the enemies of the Jewish people find reasons and find ways. Remember the Vilna Gaon, the fascinating interpretation of Vilna Gaon, that Haman didn't say what he really wanted to do in the end, you know, and did it in a secret way. The possibility that Achashverosh did know, the possibility that he didn't know, the possibility they knew what he was doing all along. Yeah. Using the anti-Semitism as a tool in order to get what he wants. You keep the money. You know why in the end? So now another parish. Why do you say you keep the money?
I'll get it in the end.
Wow. Fascinating. Yeah, fascinating. That's Megillat Esther. You know what I'm saying? All right, yeah. I'll stop here.